welcome to this special CertSecurity.com Security School podcast, brought to you by Aladdin Knowledge Systems. I'm Billy Hurley, and it's great to have you with us. Today, we're going to count down the top five technologies on the leading edge of authentication. Joining us on the line is Mark Diodati, a senior analyst for Burton Group Identity and Privacy Strategies. He has more than 18 years of experience in the development and deployment of information security technologies. Thanks for being here, Mark.
Oh, my pleasure, Billy.
Now, before we get started, I want to mention that this podcast is part of our Identity and Access Management School, which you can visit at any time by navigating to certsecurity.com/IAM school. Okay, Mark, let's start the countdown. Technology number five, facial recognition software. Are we really there yet?
Well, it's early days for sure, and of all the five that we're going to talk about today, this is definitely, I would characterize this one as bleeding edge. And it does overcome some of the personal objections to biometrics that people have with iris scans or retina scans or fingerprint scans, because it's pretty easy to use. And its application primarily is with authentication to physical access control systems, commonly referred to in the industry as PACS. And as a result, you're talking about users coming into the building and authenticating via facial recognition. It takes a second or maybe a sub-second to do it, which is a little slow compared to maybe swiping a card. So one of the things that it really has to be borne out by the technology is that if it can support a very large organization, because think of people coming into the building at the beginning of the day and needing to authenticate. You've got to have separate booths almost for people to approach the facial recognition software and authenticate with their face. And also, there's a significant infrastructure investment involved, not only at the front door, but if you've got physical access control systems, for example, controllers and door panels and readers and all that at individual doors, then you have to look at replacing those as well.
Okay, continuing on, item number four in our countdown of the top five leading-edge authentication technologies, the HSPD-12 smart card.
Right, this is the Homeland Security Presidential Directive 12 smart card that was mandated by George Bush, and this is about handing a smart card to every federal employee and contractor. And what makes this leading-edge, you may say, well, we've been talking about smart cards for a long time, and you know, people make the joke that this is the year of the smart cards. I'll refrain from doing that. But what makes this unique is that this really is a smart card of the future. It's a card that has a single chip for storage and processing and two interfaces, one for contact. That's the gold chip that we're all used to seeing for smart cards, and contactless, which is RFID style. It's proxy style technology. So what makes this so leading edge is if you can use two interfaces to a single chip, you now have some more advanced authentication capability for physical access control systems, like certificate-based authentication, like on-card biometric matching, for example. The problem with this technology is, while it's a sound technological choice for the future, it's largely incompatible with most federal agencies' physical access control systems. So these agencies are forced to implement things like multi-protocol door readers, so they have to rip out door readers, potentially rip out controllers, which is sort of the head and logic of a physical access control system, or implement something like a tri-interface card, which is a dual-interface card like HSPD-12, but it has legacy-style physical access control authentication capability. So the card can be used for example, access to HID proc-style physical access control readers and also HSPD-12 FIPS 201. FIPS 201 is Federal Information Processing Standards 201, which is the standard that describes the HSPD-12 card.
Moving on with the countdown of the top five technologies on the leading edge of authentication. Item number three, authentication as a service.
Yes, this is the, along with the number one choice that we'll talk about, this is the most recent addition to the pantheon of authentication choices. And companies like Arcot, Covisint, Ping Identity, Simplify, TriCypher have all introduced products this year that do this. And it's an authentication service that exists out in the cloud, so it's not hosted on site at all. It is purchased by enterprise, and the enterprise employees do use it. It's just that the service itself is out in the cloud. And it's like an Oreo cookie from an architectural perspective. At the bottom layer is all the different authentication mechanisms that might be accepted into the service, and that could be one-time password device that an employee would use, or password, It could be integrated Windows authentication or Kerberos credentials. So that's the bottom layer, the authentication mechanisms that are accepted. The middle layer is what we would call a security token service. So its job is to take the authentication and then flip it over to a token type that can be accepted, and that's the top layer. So the top layer of this token type is, well, what can we log users into now? They've authenticated to the service. What can we log them into? And this top layer, this the interoperable token service layer, is about, okay, we'll log them into Salesforce.com, federated applications, including things like Google applications, even applications, web applications that require username and password. So the user authenticates to the service in the cloud, and then they get access to all of these external and potentially internal applications. And there's been a high degree of interest in this, particularly with small, medium businesses, but also large businesses see the value in this capability because it relieves some of the burden of the authentications that they have to manage. The one problem that varies across the different vendor products is provisioning capability, which means how are users defined to the authentication as a service cloud. And some have provisioning capabilities, some don't. So you may have an additional administrative burden defining users to the authentication as a service system so that they can begin to use this capability of being able to authenticate once, access many external applications.
Is there a greater risk when authentication is provided by an outsider?
Well, you certainly have to look at, I think that's a fair question, you certainly have to look at what controls are in place for authenticating, and you need to understand not only how the authentication as a service provider is doing the authentication, but also what's happening on the other side, that is, what applications are users having access to. And so, for example, if you're using Federation, that's great, that's relatively secure. If you need to use username and password, so the user comes in, authenticates maybe with a one-time password device to the authentication as a service, and then they're going to try and access websites that are protected by passwords. Well, now you're storing passwords, and you have to determine whether those passwords are going in the clear from the authentication as a service provider and so on. So you definitely have to look and understand the internal controls that will be in place with the authentication as a service and see if they meet your needs internally.
Okay, Mark, we're getting close to the top of the list. Item number 2 on our countdown of the top 5 leading-edge IAM tools, card-shaped one-time password devices. Mark, how has this improved upon problems with OTPs?
Well, OTPs remain the most prevalent authentication, strong authentication mechanism within the enterprise. There's no doubt about that. And there are reasons why that's the case. One is that the devices are truly portable. I don't need client software. There are instances where I might use a software-based one-time password device, but that certainly isn't the majority use case. So they're portable. They're easily managed administratively. The systems that do that are relatively mature, and organizations are familiar with one-time password devices. So from a management perspective, they're relatively easy to manage, and that would be relative to other things like biometrics or smart cards. And finally, they're well understood by users. They have high usability. Users understand pretty well this idea of replacing a static password with this password and perhaps a PIN that comes off their one-time password device. Where these things fall down is in the consumer space, because here you're not talking about a single employee-employer relationship where a user will typically have one-time password device. If you're an employee, you don't carry many of them. What these credit card-sized devices do is they look like a credit card, they bend like a credit card, and they have the bank, the user's account number and so on them. You can print on them, but they also have a battery and a liquid crystal display. And so they function as a one-time password device. So they're portable, first of all, which makes them very easy to use. Most users are going to carry a bank card anyways. Second, it mitigates the token necklace problem that would be more prevalent in the consumer space. For example, if I bank with one or two places and then I have my investment somewhere else, and so you're looking at a possibility of carrying multiple one-time password devices. Well, these card-style one-time password devices, you can carry them because they can fit in your wallet. It's not a big deal at all. Some concerns. They're still unproven on a very large scale, specifically around battery life and durability. Are they going to survive a Minnesota winter when, you know, someone uses them as an ice scraper, you know, for example? The other one is that the price is still relatively high, although that continues to come down. And as that price comes down, it's going to start looking like the price of shipping these things becomes more expensive than the devices themselves, and there you'll start to see many more of these devices deployed. The major vendor in the space is a company called Innovative Car Technologies. They've also made some acquisitions, but they're the largest vendor in the space.
Okay, here we are. We've reached the top of the list. The number one technology on the leading edge of authentication is personal portable security devices.
Yes, the PPSD, and it's a USB-style smart card. And you may say to yourself, well, I've seen and heard about those before. Well, this is relatively new technology in that the smart card chip controls access to the USB flash memory. It overcomes the problem and objections with one of the problems and objections with smart cards of a lack of space for storing stuff. You know, maybe you have a 128K or 256K smart card, and that'll store certificates and maybe a few SSO credentials, but not much more. It also overcomes the security concerns that people have with USB thumb drives, because unless you put in the right PIN, there's no way you're going to access what's on that flash drive with a PPSD. It just won't happen. And also, because there's a smart card present there, you have an ability to do native file encryption on the device. So it's highly tamper-resistant. So it overcomes the objections, the space objections of smart cards, and the security objections of USB devices. What's exciting about these things is that it's also an authenticator, so it's a smart card, so you can put certificates on it and do what you would ever do typically with smart cards and certificates. And the large storage space affords you some really interesting opportunities. For example, you can actually store a whole desktop on this. You can store a hardened web browser on it, or a complete single sign-on application, not just the credentials, but the application. And again, things like file encryption. So users are already carrying these devices anyways. I don't know about you, Billy. I've got three or four of them lying around here right on my desk. And they're already used to carrying these devices. They need them to move things around. One thing I should say about the PPSD as well is you can set up a public and a private area. So you could set up an area of a 4 gigabyte PPSD, maybe a gig of it is public, and that's freely readable just like it would be any other USB thumb drive. So you can pass around PowerPoint presentations or whatever else without having to worry about authenticating to it. And then the remaining 3 gigabyte, let's say, would be private. Some issues here. The price is still relatively high. So for organizations that, and we get lots of requests for information about this, where they're saying, well, I'm sick of paying X amount of dollars for a one-time password device. My renewals are coming up next year. Let's start looking at things like smart cards or smart cards for physical and logical convergence or these PPSD devices. The prices are still relatively high in this. You're looking at about $100 or so for one of them. But I would expect that price to continue to drop down. And the three primary vendors in this space are Gemalto, which has got, I think, a step up on most of the other organizations, smart card organizations, because they've worked so much with Microsoft and have embedded some cryptographic components within the core operating system. But there's also MXi, and the thing that MXi does that's interesting is they actually have a biometric fingerprint reader on the device. And then a company called Proveris, and their interesting thing is that they can mix and match multiple proximity technologies, contactless technologies, to physical access control systems as well.
Mark, how much customization does an organization have regarding the user experience? In other words, could a company change security options based on its policy, and is that easy to do?
Well, it's definitely not easy to do. I think these are good questions. When we talk to companies and they're trying to figure out an authentication strategy, there's really three things that you need to look at. One, the first thing you need to look at is your identity assurance levels that are required. This is not so much an intellectual concept as people would think. It's almost like information classification, where you go, well, HR, we require high identity assurance, a password won't be sufficient, or, you know, if you're going to actually administer information on of consumers and change their transactions, then you need, you know, higher identity assurance than if you access the employee portal. So that first level is figuring out what your information classification is or your identity assurance levels are. And then from there you can derive what authentication mechanisms are required. This is a second part. So you start looking at things like, well, passwords won't be sufficient, so OTPs might be okay. Smart cards would certainly do the trick with certificates. And then that third area is you need to take a look at all of your applications in your environment that you want to use the stronger authentication mechanisms with, and you have to figure out what works with them. So, for example, biometrics might not work with everything. Certificate-based smart card authentication will work with most of your stuff, maybe not all of it. And then OTPs will work with as much or maybe more than typical certificate-based style smart card stuff, just because the technology's been around a long time. And one thing we found is that organizations have to mix and match these things. There's not one single authentication mechanism that will work well with their user constituencies and the applications that are required as well. So from a policy perspective, you kind of look at all of those things and you figure out what it is to do. Looking at some use cases, we see organizations that move from one-time password devices to smart cards. One of the common things they might do, for example, is they will, rather than buy hardware-based one-time password devices, they'll actually pick up a software-based one-time password device that will be used in conjunction with the smart card to overcome or to provide broader application ubiquity coverage. So if I can't use a certificate, and OTPs have always worked with this application, well, we won't buy a more expensive hardware one. We'll use a software one.
Mark, as we wrap things up, generally speaking, what types of companies should consider experimenting with these leading-edge authentication methods? Are there particular verticals that would benefit from certain technologies?
Sure. And with the facial recognition stuff, the sweet spot tends to be high-tech manufacturing, where you've got some concerns about the physical security of the things you're making, but maybe your user population doesn't typically access a workstation, or they're kind of moving around a lot. Facial recognition might be an area to take a look at. Again, it's really early times with that one. HSPD 12 is obviously a federal government initiative, but the commercial industry is watching very closely because there were some smart decisions made about the technology for HSPD 12 smart cards. Now it's looking at the enterprises are looking at the government to figure out how they're making these work with existing PAC systems. Are they changing systems? What approaches have worked best? With authentication as a service, the vendors are targeting small to medium businesses that maybe don't want to own the technology, but clearly we are aware of some very large organizations that are looking to deploy this as well, because there are benefits for pretty much everybody if you've got external applications out there like Salesforce or Google Apps, or maybe even some internal applications. With the card-shaped one-time password devices, that clearly is the domain of the financial institutions and investment houses, where they're looking to improve the security of what they're trying to do. Also look at the compliance mandates, for example, from the FFIEC, Federal Financial Institutions Examination Council, which we expect some additional guidance on. Clearly financial institutions will be looking at that. However, some enterprises, if they've got the interest, could use this technology as well. You could certainly print a picture on it. And while the existing cards today don't have physical access control capabilities built in, it certainly isn't a leap to see that they could be built to do that. With the personal portable security device, you're looking at certain industry verticals, for example, financial services, that have got a little extra money to spend, maybe have a paperwork reduction mandate so they can do some digital signing, which pulls in the certificate-based stuff. Maybe they have high data breach protection needs and are concerned about data being exposed or lost, and they have a highly mobile user population. Well, a personal portable security device would overcome some of those objections, because if I leave it in the pocket of the airline seat, that data isn't recoverable. There's no way to access it unless you have the PIN or the recovery key, which would be something that an administrator would have.
Mark Diodati of Burton Group, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Billy.
Thanks also to our sponsor, Aladdin Knowledge Systems. For more information from our Identity and Access Management School, visit searchsecurity.com/IAMschool. You can also listen to more of our podcasts by visiting our podcast page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. I'm Billy Hurley. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.